Welcome back once again. Time flies when you're having fun. It is Tuesday once again, which of course means it's time for the Parish of the Patriots 298th installment of the show. I'm glad you're here. If you're new, I appreciate you stopping by. I ask that you'll listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. Some weeks it's more roughly than others. Last week it was real rough, really roughly. I might be really early, might come a little late, but I do aim for kind of a 50-50 split for the Christian specific segment. Give it a listen. It probably won't be anything like what you might expect. You might actually get something out of it, even if maybe it's not your thing. Maybe you think, well, it's not your deal. You can listen to it or you cannot. I don't really care, but I do encourage. I think you might get something out of it. If you are a Christian believer, you definitely get something out of it. And that is what it is intended for. And that's why I put it separate for people that it is not their thing. I ain't trying to shove nothing on anybody. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is very much appreciated. And it's so easy because we have the ultimate in crypto privacy coin. That's right. Snail mail. The address is right here on the description page. Radio Albion for this show. Just look right there. There it is. Address the envelope. A stamp is cheaper than mining fees. So see, I'm doing you a favor all the way around, and you do me a favor, and that does it does mean a lot. With that having been said, listener supporter mailbag GPT with love from the cross. That's from Mr. T, who happens to also be our Lone Ranger this week. Mr. T, yes, right, you are the one, you only listener supporter mailbag is over. That's how it's how fast it goes by. When there's only one listener supporter mailbag, it means the shows have sucked lately. No, it doesn't. I know that. Just having a little fun with it. I want to read a quote. I want to read a quote. This is from, let me see here. I'm doing this on my phone while I record this on the computer. This guy's name is Brandon Smith. I read this in an article, and I'm not familiar with this guy at all. But I happen to read this opinion piece this guy wrote, and there's a last paragraph. Really good, especially the last little part of it. I thought, really good. I like little nuggets like this. It's worth becoming it's worth repeating and sharing this quote. And this says here, he says, when these challenges arrive and evil seeks you out, know that it will use whatever means at its disposal to sabotage you. And that usually includes government. To confirm, now this is the money shot quote here, what I'm fixing to start. This is what made me, I wanted to really share this with you. I like this. To confirm how evil your society truly is, all you have to do is determine who the government chooses to help and who the government chooses to hurt. If the government regularly comes to the aid of people with ill intent while stepping on the necks of those with pure hearts, then you know that your society is on the doorstep to hell. I like that quote. I think that's a quote worth saving. It's a quote worth holding on to. I do. I like that. I think that just, it's succinct. It's just speaks a truth in a nutshell as we look at our quote unquote society and how this corrupt system around us works. I was thinking the other day, and this is just some random stuff because first part of the show is a lot of random kind of things. I was thinking about how this system functions and how the government functions. And while now in clown world, we kind of have seen things at an extreme, on a certain level has functioned like this. It has functioned like this for some time. It's just now it's kind of at this weird absurdity. At its end stage, it's become absurd, which is kind of funny because I think this proves how God has a sense of humor. Now, as a society collapses, try not to preach too early here, but as a society collapses, there's just certain patterns when you get outside of the framework that God has laid out and like he's told you, if you do things within this framework, things will tend to work out for you. But when you get further and further outside of that framework, you wind up with disastrous consequences. And yet people are always convinced that they know so much better. It's different now. We're smarter now. And they go outside of the framework. And you wind up with clown world crap. I was thinking about how something that really illustrates how this system works. If you're the corporation, if you have money versus regular people, and yet people have this idea that somehow they matter because they're a voter. Like whenever you watch some video of the police stomping the shit out of somebody because they didn't respect their authority enough, and you'll see people comment on it and be like, this is outrageous. They work for us, the taxpayers. Imagine having that naive mindset that you're going through life thinking that that's really how this works. They answer to us, by golly. Yeah, tell yourself that over and over while they're stomping the shit out of you. They're hut-hutting through your front door. You work for me, buddy. See how far that gets you. Being detached from reality is never going to bring you to a good place. You're not dealing with reality. You can sit there and try to lecture some cop with a bad attitude because, you know, he just took his shot of steroids before going to the gym this morning. He's a little on edge. Little on edge. You're going to stand there and lecture him about how he works for you. You pay his salary. There is a story going around. I'm getting off track. I'm going to get back to the point I actually wanted to make. But there's a story going around, and it turns out in the state of Tennessee, they did a little investigation. They actually found, I don't know, actually did a little investigation. 600 people over the course of a certain amount of time had been arrested for DWI. And when their blood test results came back, they tested 0.0 for anything, alcohol, drugs, nothing. 600 people. Now, that's statewide. You might say, well, that isn't very many people. Well, what does that say? Can you imagine getting pulled over? Some cop says, well, I think you're drunk. You're like, well, I'm not drunk. Well, then you must be on drugs. No, I'm not on drugs. I'm going to arrest you anyway, and we'll take you for a blood test. Oh, wait, what? And they arrest you, throw you in jail, charge you with some sort of intoxication, and you got to wait like 3 months for the blood test to come back and say it was zero. Hell, you don't even know this system's so corrupt. They may still try to prosecute you anyway. I don't know. Even if they don't, you ain't going to get that time back. Imagine you have to call up your family and be like, hey, can y'all come bail me out of jail? They done arrested me for DWI. And they'd be like, where were you out drinking? Well, I wasn't. Well, then why did they arrest you? How can this happen? You're paying their salaries. They work for you, the taxpayer. Doesn't work that way. I was thinking about how the system works. And a good illustration of this is something happens here that happens has happened here locally for me over the past years. Because this is a long watching things. I look at these things in the context of years. Now, if the government wants to say you have a place and you like it. You like this place. You love it. This is your home, your property. The government shows up one day and says, nice property you've got here. We want to build. I would say everybody uses the example of a highway, but it doesn't have to be a highway. When Jared Jones decided to build his monstrosity AT&T Stadium for the Super Bowl champions from 30-something years ago, Dallas Cowboys, you know, people lived there. And they used, as you know, eminent domain. They always use the highway example because they want to build a highway. We can't get anything done if the government doesn't have the authority to force you to sell your property so they can build a highway. Otherwise, people would just ask ridiculous prices. And that's not reasonable, is it? And you look at that and you say, yeah, man, that's true. I mean, we have to have roads. We have to have roads, and we can't have like every road project. Everybody that owns 1 acre of land in the way of that road can sit there and say, I want $60 quadrillion for my acre of land. You'd never get the road built. And people say, that sounds reasonable. Now, when they use this same eminent domain so Jerry Jones could have his quadrillion-dollar stadium over there, that sounded a little less reasonable. They always sell you these ideas because it sounds reasonable. We need roads. We need highways. The government's going to have a way to make people take a reasonable price so that we can have the road built. That sounds reasonable. And we all say, yeah, that sounds reasonable. what's not reasonable is when you understand how it actually works. Who batters and who doesn't? Now, we had a situation here within the local area, and it's been an ongoing situation for years. The railroad, they have a switching yard, and it's near a major highway. There were people commute back and forth to work. And as such, because they're switching, hooking and unhooking these cars, they're constantly blocking that highway. And in times of high traffic, like when people are trying to get to or from work, they would have traffic backed up for miles and the damn train just sitting there, blocking the road, making people very, very angry and unhinged because this damn train blocks the road. This became such a problem, the state got involved and said, well, we got to do something about this because the train, the railroad, does their hitching and unhitching their different cars here. And for some reason, they always manage to do it right when it's the most busy. They don't just do it in the middle of the night. They do it at rush hour every time. People backed up for miles on end because the railroad is camped in the middle of the highway with their stupid-ass train. Now, once upon a time, it was illegal for the railroad to block a road longer than, I don't remember, 10 minutes or whatever it was. But that law went away for some mysterious reason. Now, because this became a problem, the state came in and told the railroad. They were like, and I don't remember the numbers, so we're just going to throw out Dan numbers out there. But the state came in and told the railroad, please move your switching yard somewhere else. Relocate your switching yard to another location so that you're not blocking the highway. And they told the railroad, look, we'll give you a gajillion dollars to do this. And the railroad was like, lol, no. We want $60 quadrillion to do this. And this lol, add LOL to the end of it. No, we want $60 quadrillion to move our switching yard. Well, the state can't force the railroad to move their switching yard. So the state undertook building a massive, a loop around and over the railroad, around the whole area so that people wouldn't be blocked off by the train, which I had affectionately over the years nicknamed the troll train because they're just trolling people with that shit. And they just finished this project, by the way. So they spent, instead of $50 quadrillion. Again, these are made up numbers by me, obviously. They spent $50 quadrillion to build this massive loop to go around because, you know, they can't force the railroad to move their switching yard. Of course, now some of the people, what happens when building this massive highway loop around for the railroad, some of those people maybe didn't want a highway running through their property. Guess what? It's like, well, too bad, you'll take what we're offering or we'll do eminent domain because we're building highway here. And we'll do eminent domain and take your land and build our highway through it. One way or the other, we're building our highway, so you better take what we offer. Otherwise, you're in bad luck because we'll do eminent domain and that'll be that because we're building this highway. Now, you see the difference. No threat of some form of eminent domain enforcing the railroad to move their ship. No, they can't do that. But for you, they'll do that and seize your property to build a loop because, after all, the railroad wants $60 quadrillion instead of the state saying, you've got this amount of time to move it or else. It's a society as a nutshell, isn't it? Eminent domain for you, but it's the free market and private property for the railroad. You see, they're different. The state couldn't encroach on their private property rights. They have a right to put their switching station wherever they want. That's it. We got to respect private property. It's funny watching people fall for this rhetoric over and over too. You know, conservatives will sit there, oh, that's right. You know, libertarians, that's right. We got to respect the private property. The railroad has their private property rights. Even while the government shits all over your private property rights by saying we're going to put a highway through your acreage, through your property. Whether you like it or not, we will force you. Besides, you all agreed to it because it's reasonable. We got to have highways, right? Yeah, but why couldn't you make the railroad? Don't ask these sorts of questions. private property rights for the railroad, eminent domain for you. This is this system in a nutshell. The voters, that's what I was talking about, you know, during this whole election nonsense, which thank goodness is more or less over. We're still hearing that they're dragging it out for ratings, I guess. But, you know, this whole thing of, you know, voters decide. America 2024, voters decide. Voters don't say shit. Because the politicians work for me. I pay their salary, by golly. Call your congressman. At the same time, his AIPAC representative calls him. Whose call do you think he's going to take? It's funny how people buy into these concepts. They're observably not true. They don't work for you. If they worked for you, they would treat you like their boss. But they don't treat you like their boss because they don't work for you. Not even like remotely. It's just a fantasy people created with themselves, I think, as a defense mechanism to cope with such a failing, you know, with such a corrupt and failing society. These people are public servants and we're going to hold them to account. It's kind of, and it's funny because you read so many things where people complain about the state of society, and yet they themselves are still holding on to these fantastical, completely illusionary views of how the system works. This country is a mess because the voters keep putting the wrong people in office. You'll read about some disastrous policy and people say they voted for it, but did they really? I mean, maybe to a certain extent, there is public support for insanity. But did they really? Do they work for you? Quit coping. It's just not the way the system works. You know, you always have to hope that, like, when you read stories about the U.S. going around bombing and supporting bombing countries around the world. Our greatest ally ever. Bombing hospitals and whatnot. And I always have to hope that, like foreign peoples, especially particularly those who are the victims of these things, it's like, don't terrorism me, bruh. You mean we're along for the ride, same as you are. You know? It doesn't matter. It's not the American people support this. American people, we're just kind of along for the ride. They're going to do what they're going to do regardless of what the American people want. American people want really doesn't factor in there at all. In this way, the American people are like, we're like human shields, as it were. If you think of America, if I was explaining this to foreign people, I would point out how ridiculous it is whenever they make this accusation that Hamas are using, you know, their set up base in a hospital. They're using the Palestinians as human shields. They set up their base in this latest hospital, school, whatever, civilian infrastructure. It's Hamas was there. And there it is, the Hamas's fault that Israel had to blow up another school or hospital because, you see, Hamas is using the Palestinians as human shields. Of course, that argument is ridiculous because it's obvious there's no point in Hamas doing that because Israel could give two shits about Palestinian human, quote-unquote, human shields. They're going to bomb them anyway. It's like that. The U.S., you could do a terrorism on the American people. It doesn't matter. The U.S. government doesn't care. They're going to buy. We're the human shields. They'll bomb us. They don't care. There would be no point. You can't use this as human shields to do your terrorism against because the government doesn't care. They'd bomb us themselves if Israel wanted them to. We're all on some level or another. We're the Palestinians if it comes down to it. They'll treat us all like the Palestinians. You read these news stories, because you read these stories and whenever you see like for myself, I'm old enough that like this militarized police that we have since 9/11, since 9/11, you know, this whole militarization of the police where the police are now devoid of common sense. They all dress up like the military and act, you know, a lot of times act really, really absurd. And then you read, and it turns out that a lot of this training, this new, what I call new training, since post 9/11 training, the U.S. police have been getting a training regimen that is sometimes taught directly, if not directly, it's a regimen designed by Israel. And most people don't even know that. And when they deal with the police acting in an absurd manner, and they look and they see these militarized police, or the police hut them for some reason, or walk up on them at a normal traffic stop and act like, you know, they just, I don't know, committed mass murder or something because they ran a stoplight or whatever. They don't understand. These police have been trained by Israel, or at least have undergone a training regimen that was designed by Israel. So again, I always say, we have more in common with the Palestinians than you think. If you have a bad encounter with a cop, you got just a small, tiny taste of what it's like to be a Palestinian. When you finally end this encounter and you're driving home and you're mad, you know, you're mad because that cop had an attitude and he was unreasonable and treated you like you were some convicted felon because he says you didn't come to a complete stop at the stop sign, even though there was nobody around except him hiding in a bush. And you're angry. Just stop for a minute and think, it's Israeli training. Your unpleasant experience was brought to you courtesy of Israel. You just got a tiny taste of what it's like to be a Palestinian. To a certain extent, we all are Palestinians. I'm not comparing what we got going on compared to what those people have going on. I don't mean to belittle having your entire community bombed and your families killed. But the point is, we have about as much value to this system as the Palestinians do when push comes to shove. I remember there was a story from several years about years ago. Some corrupt cop or somebody, you know, they didn't like these people. I don't even remember what the circumstances were. But long story short, these people who had nothing to do, they had committed no crimes. They were asleep in their house. And at like 2 a.m, they got hut-hutted. They kicked in their door and people were killed. I don't remember if everybody in the house was killed. And it wound up the police. It was a made-up deal. These people hadn't done anything wrong. Welcome to the West Bank, huh? You know, it's the police. It's the IDF. It's some crooked detective that has an axe to grind with you, or maybe wants your property. It's the quote unquote settlers in the West Bank. Congratulations. You get a taste, just like you were in the West Bank. It's the same thing. People don't even stop thinking about it. They don't even stop think that, you know, this illusion they create for themselves is not how the world around them works. Now, I always point out, this isn't just like bitching. I always point these things out. I think it's important because you need to understand how the world around you works. The last thing you want to do is get caught up in this system. If you think when a Palestinian gets rounded up and thrown in a prison in Israel, you think they're sitting around going, well, I can't wait to get my day in court because I'm going to be able to stand up in front of the judge and tell my side of the story. You need to understand how the system works. All of you listening probably do, but I think it bears repeating because so many of those around us do not even remotely grasp how the system works. Legal, what is legal is just whatever they decide it is at the time. They're trying to still somewhat maintain this facade. You know, I saw a video recently. You know, and the police kick this guy's door open. And he says, you can't come in here. You don't have a warrant. And they say, I don't need a warrant. And they come in anyway. Of course, they do technically need a warrant, but they just walk in anyway because they don't care. What are you going to do? Go hire a lawyer? I'm going to tell you, good luck with that. If you're in an accident or a car wreck, you have lawyers blowing up your phone. If for the 6 millionth time, the Israeli-trained police force kicks your door in, said, laughs at you, whining about your warrant, good luck with that. You ain't going to find anybody. This is going to take your damn case. Understand how it works. The last thing you want is to get caught up in this machine. I always laugh whenever you hear some clueless normie, usually of a conservative variety. You know, and I'm sympathetic. I mean, don't get me wrong. I never want to come across like bashing these people, because when you know, when you interact with people who say they're conservative, you're some of the best people, you know, I mean, they mean well. But bless their hearts, they're just clueless. And they'll say, well, if this person is innocent, you'll hear about somebody on the rare occasion gets exonerated if it turns out they were innocent. And they'll say, well, if that person is innocent, why would they plead guilty? They pled guilty, so they have to be guilty. Right. Again, it's not how the system works. If you get caught up, if you're unfortunate enough to get caught up in the legal system, they're going to, it doesn't matter. It's not a TV show. It doesn't matter if you're innocent or not. That's the first thing a person has to understand. That's why you want to stay away from getting caught up in this system at all, if at all possible. But sometimes they may just suck you up anyway. You just did the wrong place at the wrong time. And they suck you up in the system. If you don't understand how the system works, you're going to have a hard time regardless. But you're going to have a more difficult time if you don't understand how the system works. That's why it's so important. But I didn't do anything wrong. It's okay. They're going to figure out I didn't do anything wrong and let me go. This is where people wind up making the mistake of telling their life story to the police. If I could just make them understand I didn't do anything, they'll let me go. Not understanding that they don't care whether you did anything wrong or not, whether you are guilty of what they're charging you with or not, is probably for the most part irrelevant. They're just looking for somebody to hang this on so they can move on to the next thing. The prosecutor wants a conviction. He doesn't care. If you're innocent, guilty, he is not going to lose any sleep over it. That's how the system works. If you get sucked up in the system, they're going to level 58 charges on you, bogus all of them. And they're going to sit and you first, next thing you're going to find out is just like, you're not in an accident. You don't have an injury. You're going to have a hard time finding a lawyer. And if you do find a lawyer, you're going to probably find out that you can't afford him. You can afford about 1 hour of his time. It ain't going to get you nowhere. So you wind up going to the court and begging for a court-appointed attorney. And you get your court-appointed attorney who doesn't want to be there. He doesn't give a shit if you're guilty or innocent. So the prosecutor, the state, sits down with your court-appointed lawyer who doesn't care anything about you with their 58 charges. And then your court-appointed lawyer is going to come back to you and he's going to say, well, they're leveling these 58 charges. And if you get convicted, you're going to do the rest of your life in prison. But they're offering you a plea deal. If you'll go ahead and plead out to these charges, you get 2 years in prison. You need to take the deal. And you're like, but I didn't do that. You're asking me this because it's a satanic system, by the way. You're asking me to bear false witness against myself. And your court-appointed lawyer is going to say, you need to take this deal. I'm not going to court with it. If you're not going to take this deal, you can find somebody else, but I can't afford anybody else. See, they got you. So you wind up with people that finally commit, you know, bear false witness against themselves, cop to charges they didn't even do, under the threat of, if you don't, you'll spend the rest of your life in prison. Just go ahead and admit that you did something that you didn't do, and you'll get 2 years in prison. That is the nature of the system that you live under, that rules over you. You need to understand that so you can do everything you can to avoid getting caught up in it. Don't get caught up in it. But I'm innocent. They don't care. I remember there was a case years ago. And it was an open and shut case. This guy had been in prison for years. And it turns out he was innocent. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, we found a new witness and some kind of vague nonsense that could be argued. I mean, it was an open and shut case. I don't remember what the circumstances was, but I remember it was open and shut case. The guy didn't do it. I think it was like a DNA cleared him. And then somebody else actually confessed. They had somebody else that was in prison and he finally confessed. Yeah, actually, he was the one that did it. This guy was 100%. There was no arguing. There, like I say, it wasn't, oh, well, the defense is coming up with some ridiculous, we found a new witness thing that you can look at and question and go, you know. This was an open and shut case. An innocent man has been in prison for 10 years. The prosecutor still fought it. I mean, he eventually had to because it looked so bad and it got into the media, amazingly enough. And it looked so bad. He finally, but at first, he refused. He was like, nope, nope. He's been convicted. He's had his two appeals. And the courts upheld his conviction. Because see, all that mattered to the prosecutor was the conviction. Even when it's an open and shut case, you put an innocent man in jail. They don't give a shit. Now, if he doesn't give a shit about somebody that's been in prison for 10 years, wrongfully prosecuted for a crime he doesn't commit, do you think they care if you get caught up in the machine at the beginning? They just want the conviction. Prosecutor might want to run for a higher office. He might be up to be a judge. You see, he needs that higher position. And all you are is a number in the conviction column. So he can look at his resume. You're just part of his resume. Understand how the system works. As such, don't get caught up in it. That's like they say, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. Just don't get caught up in it. Try to stay out of it in any, you know, in every way you can. And at the end of the day, look, at the end of the day, if they want to, they can find something, even if they have to make it up. Just don't do anything to make it easy for them. I would highly advise against that. Anyway, we got to get in. We got to keep on rolling. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. We're roughly halfway through the show. We're actually kind of doing it like we're supposed to this week. So we got to go ahead. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. So you know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, in a shocking turn of events for this week's Christian-specific segment, I'm going to actually read a news story. And it's a short story, so I'm just going to read the whole thing. This comes from thenordictimes.com. I'll try to remember to link it up in the show description, but I may forget because I never do news articles on this show. But I will try to remember. And the headline of this story is Norwegian Priests Skip a Bible Verse Criticized for Anxiety. Bishops in Norway believe that a verse from the New Testament, quote, communicates poorly and have started to exclude it from funeral services. This has attracted strong criticism in Christian circles in Norway, where it is believed that priests have become increasingly restrained in their faith. Restrained in their faith. John 3:16 is a mandatory Bible verse at funeral services in Norway, but many priests often choose to omit it. For this reason, the Norwegian bishops have asked the National Board for Worship Life to consider whether the Bible verse should be an optional part of the services. This, in turn, has drawn strong criticism from Christian Norway, with Bjørn Selbekk, editor of the Christian newspaper Dagen, among others, pointing out that John 3:16 is, quote, the most central passage in the entire Bible. It seems that the bishop's council no longer wants to stand for classical Christian theology, he tells Norwegian state broadcaster NRK. From other quarters, it is pointed out that the proposal is lenient and that the church appears, quote, anxious. I think this underscores a trend over time where the church seems anxious and restrained in the way it communicates its own faith, says historian and church musician Olaf Runebastrup. The Christian daily, Vartland, has also criticized the bishop's proposal. In the Church of Norway, funeral services begin with the Bible verse, while the Church of Sweden has replaced it with a milder formulation. Quote, "Let us hear the words of the Bible about finding security in God in life and death," unquote. Former Bishop Tor Berger Horgensen believes that Norway should follow Sweden's example and avoid anything that could be associated with the doctrine of damnation. This is less dogmatic and more pastoral introduction. Here, we should learn from the Swedes, says Horgensen. And with this, I would say this is where you ultimately wind up. They disregarded the Old Testament, claiming it's irrelevant. God's too mean or what other reasons. They did away with the Old Testament. Then they began deleting and omitting other parts of the New Testament that were also inconvenient. A good example is the admonition of not even allowing a woman to speak in church, much less having some form of pastoral leadership position. These two were omitted because it's offensive. It's offensive. It's exclusionary. We don't want to be exclusionary. The entire concept of hell, damnation, has just been conveniently omitted because, after all, we have to stay away, as it says in the article, we have to stay away from anything about damnation. And finally, this keeps expanding, this being offended at what is allegedly one's own faith, until finally you're down to this. You're down to John 3:16. Every one of you knows that. I don't need to sit here and read the verse to you. That's what they're down to in Norway. And we've got to be more like the Swedes. John 3:16, you see. This is just too edgy. It's too out there. Too scary. We could offend somebody. I mean, if you're claiming to be Christian and you were offended and thus omitting John 3:16, I'm serious question here. What do you have left? I mean, what do you show up and preach about? What do you even, what is there? If you can't do John 3:16, I don't know. And then this final, this line here of what they do in Sweden. This is the Swedes. You should follow the Swedes because they're always on the cutting edge of where everybody ought to want to be. Let us hear the words of the Bible about finding security in God in life and death. Can any of you tell me what that line even means? Let us hear the words of the Bible. Well, okay, let's hear all of the words of the Bible. Oh, well, I'm sorry, we can't tell you what those words are because it could be offensive. About finding security in God in life and death. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. I've read it several times, trying to pick it apart and find some sort of meaning. And from what I can tell, it's nothing but empty rhetoric. What sounds nice? Well, finding security in God in both life and death. What? You're left, finally, with nothing but empty rhetoric. It has no actual meaning. It's written, we're warned about. We talked recently on one of these shows about where Jesus talks about the kingdom of God and how he tells so many, he's going to be telling so many people, I knew you not. Be gone from me. He says, I was naked and in prison, and you bring me clothing, or you didn't bring me clothing, and you didn't counsel me, and explaining that which you did the least for the least of these, you also did or failed to do for the least of these. The flip side of the same thing. It's about being offended. Here's the thing. If this is going to be, I don't even understand why they're trying to proclaim or claim to be a Christian church anymore. You know, just make up a new religion. I'm serious. Just make up something completely different. Just go ahead, because they've all but done it. Go ahead and write Jesus Christ out of your doctrine and invent a new one. Just invent an entirely new religion, because I'm telling you, you would be better off. If you're going to claim to be a Christian believer and then at the same time turn around and be offended over Christ himself, you'd be better off just being a non-believer. You'd be better off being an atheist bird than to proclaim yourself a Christian and then go around obviously and observably offended at the name of Jesus Christ. If you're offended over Jesus, then he's going to be offended with you when it matters the most. If you claim to be a Christian pastor, if you claim to be a Christian church, and you're down to you can't do John 3:16 because it could be offensive, where are you going to be when the day of the Lord comes for you? And there you are, knowing you're offended over this little thing, and you expect, and then you're faced with Christ offended over your very presence. Then you're going to wind up with a first-hand account of that doctrine of damnation. You're going to find out firsthand because you're going to be on the railroad to it. That's right. You offended at Christ, he's going to be offended at you, and you're going to be on the railroad to hell. So be better off. Just make up a new religion. I don't know why they have to just put on the skin suit of Christianity and go around acting like, just make your own religion up. Why? Well, I do understand why. It's a rhetorical question. But why do you have to tear it down? This is what happens. This is what happens when you have nothing that you stand for. I look at things, like read our story like that, and I think, how did they get to this point? Where could you point to and say, this is where it began? This is where the compromises started, to where the slippery slope came into play. This is where can you point to and say, this is where the downhill slide began? And why? Why? I don't know. You know, it's they say maybe some of it is just biblical ignorance. You know, it takes so much work to really understand the Bible in its, you know, in its full context. And to do so, you have to understand Old Testament, New Testament. You have to understand all of it. And it's a very daunting task because obviously it's a very thick book. And perhaps just a form of, I don't know, laziness or incompetence. They can't read the Old Testament and understand it, especially in context with the New Testament. And so they just don't try. We're just going to focus on the New Testament. Don't get me wrong. I always tell new believers, you know, new believers will be like, how do I get started reading the Bible? And for a new believer, I always do recommend focus first on the New Testament, because that's, you know, that's a good starting point for your early faith. But as you mature and as you grow, you should be incorporating study of the Old Testament, because you never can truly understand the New and what different things, as they're stated in the New Testament, cannot be understood correctly unless you understand the context of the Old Testament. This also is where a lot of this misleading doctrine comes from. They'll take a passage out of the New Testament, having completely disregarded the Old, and they just invent some sort of new meaning. I don't know. You know, is it ignorance? Is it laziness? A combination of all of it? The business model of the MCC, where you're just trying to the parishioners or customers, you're trying to get in there, so you try to appease them, make them happy. Maybe a combination of all of it, but it's satanic because it's a lie. They're promoting a lie. Anyway, we got other things we're going to talk about. That just got me. When I saw that story, it just really got me that this is one of the most MCC things I have seen this week. This is one of the most MCC things I've seen since lesbian female bishops or whatever the hell else, where you wind up becoming such a ridiculous caricature that you're afraid to speak John 3:16, and you're still trying to wear the skin suit of Christianity. Just stop. Be better for you not to claim the faith at all. I mean that. We're warned, it is written, that judgment begins with the church, then everybody else. People like this put themselves in a worse position than the most vehement atheist Spurg, because at least they don't claim the faith. They're not claiming to believe. Judgment starts with the church. You start cleaning your own house before you get up in everybody else's business. And these people are claiming to be a part of it. It's not going to be good. Now, on to other things. I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought it might be worth sharing. I was reflecting. The older you get, the more reflecting you do. You look back and you look at yourself. And of course, in our faith, in our walk of faith, we're constantly reflecting on ourselves and our knowledge of the Lord as we strive as believers who aren't afraid of John 3:16. And we strive to know and understand the Lord and fulfill the purpose of His plan, because we understand, because we read the Old Testament, we understand God's plan from the very beginning when He created man, because God doesn't do anything pointless, was that we could fulfill this purpose, which was brought about in Jesus Christ, so that we could grow spiritually, mature, learn, understand, and know God in the most mature manner that we're able to achieve before the little bit of time we have in this life runs out and we go in the dirt and we are not here any longer. We have no part, as it's written in Ecclesiastes, we have no part of anything under the sun any longer. We're in the grave. It's over. So while we're here, we are trying to fulfill, doing our best to fulfill God's plan for our lives, which He had from the very beginning, which is that we might spiritually grow and learn and know and understand Him. This is our struggle. And I was thinking about our struggle, my struggle. I'm trying to think of what the German for that would be. Anyway, I was thinking about that. And one of the side benefits to this, you see, you grow and you understand and you learn about the Lord. This is what you strive to do. And a lot of times it can seem like sometimes you feel like you're making progress, sometimes you're not. And you can look back at your life and really take into account how much progress you are making. You see, you know, you might feel like I'm not making much progress now, but you look back and say 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you've made actually a lot of progress. But another side benefit, I think, and when I jotted this down, I wrote, know the Lord and know yourself. As you do make progress in the Lord, in your faith, in your spiritual growth, and you do come to know God more, as a side effect of that, as a benefit of that, you'll come to know yourself more. You'll come to understand actually who you are. I do. I really believe this. Being in the world as we are during this little bit of time that we exist in this realm, being in the world, you cannot help but to be caught up to a certain extent in worldly things and in the world around you. Everybody commits sin. Everybody winds up with bad habits and things that take root and hold in their lives. And these things, these worldly things, we're surrounded by these distractions. They tend to blind us to who we actually are. We start getting this skewed, so many people have a skewed view of who the Lord is. I don't even know what the MCC thinks God is. I don't even, At times, I question whether they even believe any of this stuff. But many people get a skewed version of God. One of the most common things you'll see is one extreme or the other of the view of the Lord. You'll have people that have this really effeminate, you know, Jesus is love and he just loves everybody and everybody's loving. Everybody's going to go to heaven and love each other and love, 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 love. And then you'll have this other view, skewed view that people have, which is that God is basically standing there with a hammer just looking for an excuse to smack you down and put you in your place, just looking for you to make one wrong move so he can hit you out of the park. You wind up with these skewed views. Likewise, and that's from a lack of understanding about the Lord. When you see somebody has this really weird, out of kilter, skewed view of who God is, this tells you that they're not spiritually matured very far. They haven't grown in their understanding of the Lord. So they have these extreme views. They don't understand who he is. That's why we're here. He wants us to understand who he is. We can't do his work in the kingdom of God if we don't even understand who he is and what he's about and why he does what he does. But likewise, just as people will wind up with these skewed views of the Lord, they wind up with these skewed views of themselves as they get bogged down in daily life and as sin takes root and they fail to work on it. As these things become habit, as they become incorporated and they take root like weeds in your yard, and you start getting, people start getting a skewed view of who they are. I don't mean who they put themselves out to be. To other people, we're going to get to that here in a minute. I'm talking about when they're by themselves and they look at themselves, and if they were to reflect on themselves, who am I? What kind of man am I? And they have a skewed view of themselves. To know the Lord is to grow closer to the truth. This is what this struggle is about. This is how we progress in this struggle. And as you know the Lord, as you get closer to him, as you strive and increase your knowledge of truth, a byproduct of that is you start seeing yourself for who you are as a person, not that skewed version of yourself. As you progress and move sin out of your life and grow in knowledge and understanding, you start realizing, you look back. When I say you look back and say, well, you've made spiritual progress, but you can look back and say, wow, 10 years ago, you know, my view of myself, who I was, who I am, was completely different than what I am now. It's not that you have changed. It's just that you didn't even understand who you were as a person. You were that off track. As you grow closer to the Lord, because he is the truth, the way, the truth, the life, you will come to a greater understanding of who you are as a person. As you understand these things, because a bad habit we have is when we reflect on ourselves. We have a tendency, because you have to have a metric by which to measure yourself, you know. If you want to know how long this board is, you can guess, but you got to have a tape measure or a yardstick or something. So you can look on there and say, well, you know, it's 30 inches long. You have to have some sort of metric. And sadly, too often, we use incorrect metric. And what I mean by that is most people wind up measuring themselves, as it were, evaluating themselves compared to other people. The problem with this is you don't know anything about other people. What you know about other people is that public face they put out, that persona, the image It's kind of like when you watch the news. If you watch the local news and they sit on there, and I always think to myself, I would never be able to trust one of these people in my personal life, because they can sit there and smile on command and try to make it look so sincere. And you know it's not real. They're not smiling like that because they're really that happy. You know, they had to be at work at 5 o'clock in the morning to do the morning show. They're not happy, and they get this smile pasted on their face. Psychopathic or something. I wouldn't trust somebody like that. But that's the face they put on for the TV. And they switch it back and forth. Like if they have a sad story, they switch it over to sad face, somber, serious face for a moment. And then the next story is about puppies. So they put the smiley face right back on. None of it has any actual meaning. Everybody does that. When you measure yourself against a metric of the people around you, understand you don't know anything about them. What you know about them is what they want you to know about them. That is that public face they put on for you. And you do the same thing. You do the same thing. You don't go around people, your coworkers or people in your life, and sit down and tell them your deepest, darkest secrets. God, I hope you don't. People think you're a weirdo. You don't do that. You put on a face, don't you? When your friends are around or you're around your coworkers and y'all are on break, you're sitting there shooting the bull. Man, what have you been up to? What do you do on your days off? I guarantee you don't tell them everything you do on your days off now, do you? You don't tell them every detail. You have an image that you sell to people, that you are comfortable with people thinking about you. So when you're around other people and you're talking to other people, you put this image out. You put this face on like the news people do. And you want people to think you're XYZ kind of person. So that is how you present yourself. Everybody does that. Let me rephrase it. Everybody does that to an extent. Now, when you're measuring yourself against those around you, they're doing the same thing. So you're not even measuring yourself against something that's accurate. If you think your neighbor has the perfect life, he's got a nicer house than you, new car, beautiful wife. Hey, man, that guy's got it made. He's got plenty of money. He's got it made. You don't know anything about that guy. You know? You don't know anything about that person because they're not going to tell you anything because it's none of your damn business. Ain't going to share you his troubles. Hey, Joe, you got it made. Joe's not going to sit there and say, man, you don't even know. I'm so far in debt, I could go under at any moment. My wife has had 58 affairs since we've been married. They're not going to tell you that. And you're measuring yourself against this person, and you don't even know anything about that person. You see what I'm saying? Now, because we all put on a public face for people to know us to some extent or another, that's just what people do. Again, it ain't anybody's business. You don't want to sit down and start telling everybody your personal business, a drop of the hat. That's not normal. But because we all do that to a certain extent, what happens is if you take it to the extreme of this, because see, you get in such a habit of putting that face on for other people, you know, this image you're trying to promote, and take it to the extreme, you get to where you do that so much. This is one of the problems with the lack of solitude that we have now. You know, the average person's life today is wake up in the morning to an alarm clock, which means they didn't want to get up or they still need sleep, but they force themselves up with an alarm clock, have enough time to get ready, go out the door, spend all day laboring, going to work, whatever you do, getting off work, getting home, take a shower, eat some supper, maybe have an hour or two to yourself to watch some TV or whatever the hell, and then you go to bed, wash, rinse, and repeat. because of this, people lack solitude. Nowhere in this daily routine is there any actual solitude. And you wind up, you spend so much time in the public domain, among, and what I mean by that is around other people, whether it's at work, church, wherever. You spend so much time around other people, and you that means you spend so much time with that public face on, that image you're trying to convey of yourself, that you lose who you are. You don't even know who you are anymore. You put on, because you could also, people also put on different faces for whichever, just depending on what group of people are around, you know. When they're around their coworkers, they put a different face on than if they go to church. They put a different face on when they go at holidays to, you know, gather up with their extended families. They have a different face, and they put all these different faces on. And the problem is, after a while, you just lose who you are. You're putting on so many masks, so many faces, that you forget who you are. You don't even know anymore. Which mask am I supposed to put on? Wait, who am I supposed to be right here for this group of people? You lose who you are. You don't even know at the end of the day. On the rare occasions you find some time for some solitude and you try to reflect on yourself, you're not even sure which part of all of this mess is yourself. As you grow spiritually and grow closer to the Lord and come to understand and know Him, this requires truth. He is truth. One of the very nice byproducts of this is as you grow, you will start stripping away these things. And you'll start really understanding who you are. And it can be an incredible journey because you, as you do progress, you look back and say, man, I had no, you know, people say, you know, oh, he's a change, you know, oh, he's a changed man or something, but he's not a change. He just lost sight back then of who he actually was. It just, a man is coming to know who he really was all along. And when you come to that realization and then you look back and you're like, how was I so clueless back then? How was I so clueless? Because you didn't become a better person. You found out who you were under all of that BS you were buried under. As you seek the Lord and go closer to truth, you strip away the falsehoods and lies and the justifications all built up around you. And guess what? In the course of that, you find out not only more of the truth of the Lord, but you find out more of the truth of yourself. And who you are, because this journey is about facing ourselves and the way we live, the decisions we make for what they are, getting rid of the justifications and the falsehoods and all of that. And you're going to find out who you are. Anyway, it's all good stuff. This is why it's so worth the journey. So fulfilling to undertake and fulfill the purpose God has for us, has for mankind, to understand that purpose and understand the world around us, understand the Lord, and ultimately understand ourselves. Anyway, I hope you got something out of it. I hope you got something out of the show, especially the Christian-specific segment. I appreciate you, as always, for tuning in each week. And hopefully, we'll see you back here next week for another installment of the Parish of the Patriots.